Valley 104.9 goes behind the scenes with former King County Councilperson Kathy Lambert every Tuesday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 6 p.m. as part of Valley 104.9's Community Talk and Info Sundays.
So thank you for joining me for the Golden Age. I know that in many places in our state, that does not make a lot of people happy. So I think the important thing is, how did we get here and what do we do? And what is the proper way, I believe, in how we deal with change? Because there's lots of ways to deal with change. So the first thing is that part of the Golden Age is now what's being called Make America Great Again. So I started thinking about what's wrong with Make America Great Again. I know that the acronym MAGA has been used in many different ways, including kind of as a swear word, for the last couple of years. But I don't think that's helped our country. And so let's talk about, what does it mean to make America great again? Well, America is the country that we live in and we love, or should love, because if you don't love your country, it's like not loving your own family, your own body. You are here and you don't have to be here. If you don't love this country and you don't want to help it, then you're not making America great again. So what does it mean to be great? What it means to be great is to live by values of being able to have kindness and safety and plenty for yourself and your family, and to help others in need. And those are the values that hold our country together. And so those are values we should all agree to. So we, most of us, I'm sure, have heard about the inauguration that happened on the 20th. And I really want to say that I thought that Amy Klobuchar, who was one of the inauguration leaders, did a fabulous job. She was gracious. She was articulate. She had some really good things to say. And one of the things that she said was, we all need to get back to the Constitution. And I thought, whoopee. And then President Trump at that moment was elect. He agreed that we all need to get back to the Constitution. So I thought, this is wonderful. Republicans and Democrats are saying we need to get back to the Constitution. So I think that that is really important. Well, people say, well, the Constitution's old. Yeah, it is. And it can be changed. But it is a solid foundation. And I think that it has served us well for 250 years. And if there's enough of a majority that wants to change it, then the process can happen. But until then, we need to honor the Constitution and our founding fathers that set a stable country for this amount of time. So the pendulum has swung. And how did the pendulum swing so far? Well, if you've listened to me before, you know that this is normal. Pendulum swings to the right, and then it gets too out there, and then people get upset, and it swings back to the center. And then it swings to the left and people get upset, and then it swings to the center. And maybe it goes a little more to the right, and vice versa. Maybe it goes a little more to the left from the center. But the best legislation is made when everybody can come together. And one of the people that I worked with in this King County Council, Julia Patterson, she and I didn't really agree on a whole lot because she was far more liberal than I. But we were really good friends. We traveled together. We had fun together. We did things together. And we listened to each other. We had lots of laughs. And we heard things in each other's values. And we found common goals, common philosophy. We once worked on a bill when we were both in the legislature. She's in the Senate and I was in the House. And they didn't think there was going to get to be a bill. And they had assigned me to go over and talk to the senator. And so I went over and we talked. And the next morning I told the caucus, we have a draft bill. And the question, after everybody started laughing because they didn't think that was actually true, I said, no, it's serious. We do have a draft bill. The next question is she alive? No, of course she's alive. We just talked it out until we got to something we could both agree on. And very frequently in governing bodies, by the time it gets to the House floor, if it's going to get to the House floor or the council vote, people have worked on it enough that they have come to a compromise. So it is possible to do that. So We are in a situation where, in those days, the people in the bodies, whether it be the legislative body or the council body, we actually became really good friends. And so we would talk to each other. We would be hearing each other in the hallways. We would be doing things to, we went out to parties together. We did things together. So we knew each other as people. And Clarence Thomas, and I think it was Sandra Day O'Connor on the Supreme Court. They were, had different political views, but they both liked opera. And so they went to opera together. They had a common thing that built friendships so that they could listen to each other and talk to each other. And that is what has been slowly eroding to the place where, in the last couple of years, it's almost a sin to talk to somebody of the other party or to share information, which is so unhealthy. Imagine not talking to anybody that you work with and then trying to make things work. So it's really important that we break down these barriers. I am so happy to hear that the new president has said, federal workers come back to work. Now, I know that means you get out of your pajamas, your fuzzy slippers are a problem. You need to get more gas in the car, and you have to find babysitting, which can be expensive. But before COVID, you took care of all those things and it functioned. But now people have gotten used to the idea that I don't have to do anything at the office. Now, I don't know at different governing bodies, well, they will say minimum 3 days at the office or 4 days or 5 days, whatever it ends up being. But to not be required to be around your peers, especially when you're making public policy, I believe is not okay. The division is horrific. There's no reason to talk to each other if you don't even see each other. And you hear no conversations. You don't, talk to anybody about what are you working on? What am I working on? Oh, I'm interested in that too. Maybe we could collaborate on that. There's no interaction that comes to the center and it becomes very one-sided. So I believe that all government employees should be in the office. Now, there are some jobs that are in the quote-quote office, which means a truck or a stand out in the forest. So I don't necessarily mean you need to be sitting in Olympia or in King County Council if your job is something outside, because that becomes your office. But you need to be around your coworkers at some points so that you can collaborate. And I have seen terrible things happen because there is not the collaboration that there used to be. So the pendulum has swung. And along the way, if you are a staunch progressive, you should have been saying to your staunch progressive friends, we might have been pushing this a little far. We've said that things that are definitely not true are true. And eventually somebody's going to wake up and say, that's not true. And if you do say something's not true, well, whose truth do you want? Is it my truth or your truth or his truth? Well, you can't have that. Truth means that it's verifiable and real. If it's not verifiable and real, it's not truth. So you can only have one truth. Now, there can be more than one truth that's true at the same time. I can be talking on the telephone and driving a car. Those are two truths, and they're at the same time. Don't worry, I do it all the time and I'm safe. Or I am vacuuming the house and talking on the telephone and talking to my husband intermittently at the same time. All those are true at the same time. But I cannot say I was vacuuming the ceiling because that's not true. So it's important that we start talking about what is truth. And we've gotten into the stage where I'm going to find the most heartbreaking, sad story to tell you because sad stories or any stories stick in a person's brain the most. And so you're like overriding your cognitive thought process of thinking systematically. I love Don Bongino, where he says, I can be passionate, but I have to be realistic. I cannot be emotional about it. I have to look at outcomes. Well, you know what? The outcomes of what we have had for the last couple of years have not been good. We've been lied to repeatedly. The one that bothers me the most is the fact that we were told that our past president was in fine mental capacity, more capable than five younger employees. Everything is fine. But you know what? That was a lie. And we now know that. If you didn't know it before, over the last couple of months, you now know it. That was a huge lie that a person with those skills and power being in a compromised mentality, that is not excusable. That is horrific that our entire country was put at risk and our setting in the rest of the world for strength and power was really mocked at. And I've done a lot of traveling in the last 2 years. I think I've been to 8 or 10 countries. I haven't added it up. And I hear a lot because I'm inquisitive about what people think about America and what their policies are in various countries. And, they have said all kinds of things about what they see in America and how disappointing it is because America is thought of, has been highly thought of around the world. And they're concerned if we are going downhill that potentially that could be a problem for them too. So, we have really got to think about at what point did the progressive movement get so far to the left that people started saying, whoa, this is too much. And the rest of the country, other than a few states, ours being one of the most, has still gone to the progressive. But even though we are still very progressive in this state, the rest of the country's not. And so we need to be really aware of what we're doing, what we're saying, how we're collaborating, because we need a lot of money that comes from the federal government. And we could be in serious trouble if we don't get the idea that for the next 4 years and maybe more, that the pendulum has swung and we need to adapt. And that doesn't mean getting in the way of every single thing that the new administration says. So far, the new administration has been very clear on where they're headed. Now, if there were any criticism of the first administration, what I would say was that Trump came in as a newbie, didn't know his way around, didn't know who were going to be good employees. He just kept many of the people that were there. And I also understand this because when I was in Olympia, I had bureaucrats tell me, I don't need to do what you want me to do because I'm going to be here longer than you are, so I don't have to do it. And I'm like, oh, really? So then when I got into leadership and those people were still sitting in the speaker's office, and I'm saying, well, last year when you told me you didn't need to do what I was telling you to do, Mr. Speaker, what do you think about that? Should this agency do this or do that? Oh, they told you last year they weren't going to do it. They sure did. Surprisingly enough, they ended up doing it. So at some point, it's a problem when you have bureaucrats who think that they don't need to do things that they're governing body, which would be the executive branch or the legislative branch, or even the judicial branch, tell them to do, although the judicial branch should be doing it through other issues, but that's more complicated. Anyway, so he went in not knowing that the people and how to really bring the right people in. And so a lot of things happened that were not good. And he got the brunt of some of that. And then a lot of things happened. So we all know it. I'm not going to get into it. For instance, the border being secure. Well, that was a different thing. He did secure the border and did some amazing things with building as many miles of the border security as he did. So this time he has already been into a situation where he feels what happens when you don't take control of the bureaucracy. And he has also had 4 years that, if they weren't hell, they were probably close to hell. So I'll say purgatory, where he has seen people who have lied. And, like anything, you can say something for a while, but as my dad used to say, sweetie, don't worry. If you tell the truth, even if it makes people mad, even if people don't agree with you, they say bad things about you, they want to cancel you, ultimately, if you're right, you will be right. And so far in my life, up to this day, things that people have criticized me for or said bad things about me were not accurate, and they've been proven to be inaccurate. So eventually it shows, and I think that that's really important. So, for instance, the people in the FBI who said that the Biden computer didn't really exist, and then it was fake, and then they weren't going to do any prosecution of it. And 51 FBI members signed a document that it wasn't necessary to prosecute, blah, blah, blah. And so they lied. And so they had their security clearance because they lied. And I don't care which branch of government you're in, if you tell lies, you can't be trusted anymore. So your clearance then is in jeopardy. So this time, he's not going to have that problem. As we know, our president has unconventional thoughts, and it's exciting. This is a wealthy man that has lots of great ideas, lots of experience. He's been through much, and he sees that the slow pace and the corruption and such are just not okay. So we are going to see unconventional thoughts. And you know what? It's time. It's time for unconventional thoughts. So much of what goes on is more of the same bureaucracy as last week and last month and the year before and 20 years later. And so it's important to go and think about where are our values? What needs to come forward and what does not need to come forward? And I will tell you, I have worked on 27 different budgets for government, and there's a lot in these budgets that, I didn't like. But you vote for it because it's a trade-off. But in this situation where the House and the Senate and the executive are all of the same party, they have the opportunity to say, we're going to hold our nose and we're going to do the right thing. And they were in a meeting where they talked about the fact that during their own campaigns, they talked about the fact that the national budget needs to be balanced. It is so bad. We have not had a balanced budget for years and years. Instead, they have done continuing resolutions, and we're still under continuing resolutions. At least at local government, we had to balance the budget. We couldn't just do a continuing resolution and go further and further and further into debt. That was not okay. When I was in the state, they did, for a while, the bureaucrats, they did try to play some games where they would tell us, so like on a mortgage, if you get a mortgage, and it's interest only, and then you have a balloon payment. They would talk about what the interest was, but they wouldn't mention in the fiscal note, which is the budget information about whatever the bill is. They wouldn't talk about the fact in there in year X, we're going to have to make a balloon payment of Y. And so as we started to see these things, our chair said, no, 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 that's not happening. And we had them do a bow wave effect all the way out. And so the question was, what's the bow wave of this? What will be the cost going on? What are we incurring here that's going to need more money out into perpetuity or out to 10 years or whatever the timeline is? So, even at the state level, we had to press back on some of that. And, we just saw not too long ago that the Office of Budget Management actually quit because he gave a fiscal note that the governor at the time did not like. And so he said that the fiscal note was wrong, and the budget chair for the state in the governor's office quit over it. And as it turned out, that the gentleman who quit, which I think he's back now, but anyway, he quit at the time, that he was right. And also, one of the think tanks in town said he was right. So there were two very well developed expertises that said, no, 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 this is not right at what the governor's presenting. So, those kinds of games play. And after a while, you have to put your foot down, like we did with the bow wave. So what President Trump is saying is we have to come to some reality about what are the costs. And one, we need to finally get a budget. And then secondly, we need to start looking at where the cuts are going to be. And, I'm very thankful that DOGE, Department of Government Accountability, is being set up because they are two businessmen and they don't have to make compromises with, this legislator who has this pet project and that one over here who has the pet project and this one over here. So it's just on its blatant face, is this a good expenditure or not? And if it is a good expenditure, then is this a reasonable dollar amount? Could we get it cheaper? So, you've all heard the stories of the $100 toilet seats. Obviously, that's not a good expenditure. Toilet seat, yes. $100, no. So there's several questions about how you spend money. Is it necessary? Is it have a purpose? Is it a reasonable cost for that purpose? And is that purpose really a priority? So these gentlemen will be in, and they are going to be giving advice to a member of the House and a member of the Senate. Now, DOGE will not be able to cut. They will be able to make recommendations to cut. It will still have to go through the House and the Senate and the President to be sure that that is going to be cut. Now, think about your own budget. If somebody came in and said, "You know what? You can't afford this anymore. You have credit card debt that is way too high, and eventually somebody's going to have to pay for this. And in the case of the government, that will be your children and maybe your grandchildren and maybe your great grandchildren. Is that fair to do to your children and grandchildren? I don't believe it is fair to do that. So we're going to have to make cuts to live within our means. So that's going to take some transparency. It's going to have to take some awareness from the public that, yeah, this probably isn't necessary. And for right now, we need to just not make that expenditure. Because for every expenditure in the budget, it's somebody's pet project. And whatever you take out, there's going to be a contingency that will be banging on your door to say, "Oh, no." And I remember we were doing a budget years ago, and we were talking about, well, this expenditure over here is probably not as necessary as this budget o item over here. And our cell phones blew up from various contingencies of vested interest saying, "You will never be elected. We'll fight against you for even mentioning that." And one even sent me a text saying that he didn't like my attitude. I'm like, "Oh, okay. I'm talking about a budget and you don't like my attitude. Okay." So, that's really not acceptable. So there are going to be people that are upset by every single cut. But we are not going to get to a balanced budget and not protect our country if we don't make some cuts. Now, that's only half of the issue. The other half is generating more income. And as you probably heard, there are some new businesses opening that have to do with AI that will be bringing 100,000 jobs back and a lot of money into the country that's new. So generating more high-paying jobs will then have more tax dollars coming into the coffers. And so that's one way of revenues. I did some figuring today. I know that this is going to make some people, so put on your seatbelt. Don't worry, don't worry. I'm not trying to give you a heart attack. I may, but I'm not intentionally trying to do that. I did some calculations. Oh, here they are. You wouldn't believe how many papers are on my desk right now. So, according to some information, it turns out that they're saying that there are 13 million people in the state right now, in the United States, that are not legally here. So I thought, okay. And they believe it's going to be a cost of $315 billion to get them out. So everybody's screaming, "Oh." So I did some calculations just for fun. Anybody who knows me knows I like to do calculations for fun. So I thought about, okay, well, if there are 13,000 million people, and one third of them is children, that is 8,076 kids. And so in our state, it's $19,000 per student per year. So that amount of money on its own would take 2 years to pay for everybody being deported. And I know there'll be people that are saying that's cruel, that's heartless. Our president doesn't believe in immigration. And I'm like, "Oh, I've heard that. Do you not know who he's married to?" And I know from both of my grandparents that were immigrants, how much they valued being in this country. And my grandmother and I talked a lot about her role coming here as an indentured servant, the issues she had being an indentured servant, and then taking the citizenship test, learning English, which she learned, but she had quite the accent, which was quite cute. But anyway, so there is a way to get into this country and be productive. And oh, she also had to sign that her sponsor her sponsor had to sign that she would take care of all of grandma's expenses and that grandma would not go on any social services. And grandma was very particular about that. She said, I signed, I would not take any social services, and I am not going to. I respect the country I've chosen, and I am not going to take any social services. So, I think it's interesting from the time when the sponsors actually promised to, sponsor the immigrants that they were bringing in to today where there's no sponsor. You don't even know who they are, and you don't even know where they've gone. So, as we look at the costs, okay, so when I was talking about that in 2 years, if one third of the people here are children, that we would recoup. Now, that is not talking about any special lunches, any special training that they may have, if they have any special needs, if they have any medical, because I would guess most of them will be on some kind of social service for medical. All of those costs are in addition. So, people who came here illegally knew they were coming here illegally. And we have gotten away as a country from being responsible that you are responsible for your actions. And if I can make a sob story out of you, oh, you don't have to be responsible. Well, that's not how it works. And when they're talking about dividing families, your children can go back with you. You don't have to divide the families. Now, the ones who are citizens, and I do support DACA. If there is a child that has been here most of their life, they don't speak the language of their country, I do believe that they should have a right if they're old enough to be able to stay here. I also know, and I know this is another one that will make people crazy, is that the birthright issue. I know personally people that are from a different country who are very, very wealthy in their country. And one of them said, I'm going to be back next year because I hope to be pregnant next year. And I'm going to come back so I can have my baby in America. And I'm like, what? You're wealthy in your country. Why are you coming back to have your baby in America? Well, I get America to pay for it. And I get better medical care than in my country. And I also can get dual citizenship for them. And I'm like, oh. So everybody's talking about the 14th Amendment. Saying that you're automatically entitled to citizenship. But there's a few little words in there that people don't talk about. And that's the words under the jurisdiction of the government. Well, if you're here as a quote, quote, guest or as an illegal, you're really not entitled to any certain, I mean, you've not obeyed the rules. So you're definitely not living by the jurisdiction. So that point will probably end up in the Supreme Court. So I do believe that we're going to have to talk about this. What is the connection to the United States? How many different countries do we want to have passports from our country? And what is the benefit to us to have people who are from other countries and have not gone through the process? Now, is the process for immigration an easy process? Heck no. Is it needing to be revamped? Yes. But to say that you're automatically a citizen, as in the example of the person I know personally, I just don't think that's right. So I think it's something we need to talk about because it wasn't something that was happening a lot. And now it seems to be happening a lot more. And it puts costs on our country. And, when it happened, I think it was in New York, when so many of the immigrants arrived, they closed a school for a couple of days so that they had a place to bring the immigrants and the illegal immigrants. And so they had the kids not go to school for those couple of days. Now, as a school teacher, I just don't like the idea of being told that my classroom is going to be used for people that have come here, and I have no idea what their immunization standard is or do they have any diseases. And now they're in my classroom. Am I going to get sick? Am my students going to get sick? What kind of classroom environment am I going to come back to after having a whole lot of people in the classroom? It's hard enough to have 30 kids in a classroom that belong there that the teacher can hold accountable to keeping it looking nice on a daily basis. But strangers, you don't know what it's going to look like. So those kids got kicked out. There are places, even in our county, where I understand that the veterans were moved out of an area to allow the undocumented immigrants to come in. So we are not really doing a good job of taking care of our citizens first. And that's part of making America great again, is that you take care of your own family first. It's like being on a airplane. They tell you put your own mask on and then put the mask on of everybody else around you. Well, that's where we need to be. This ship's in trouble. And so we had better put on taking care of our citizens, getting the things that we need to get done here to make our country in great, great stead. I was in Turkey last month and I was looking at their roads and I'm thinking, some of these roads are thousands of years old. I don't even see any potholes. If they could figure out, and the Romans and the Turks and the Greeks and all these different cultures, the Minoans, if they could figure out thousands of years ago how to make a road that would last today with no potholes, why the heck can't we? So there are things that we need to do to build better and to build with more quality than what we've done.
Kathy will be back next week for the next part of this discussion right here on Valley 104.9.